Welcome to the Church of Mavis. This is Jeffrey Pritchett and Guy Russell, your humble host. It's a few days before Valentine's Day, so I'm not single with you here, so that's good.
Will you be my Valentine, Jeff?
Yeah, for a good reach around.
Yeah.
I have a girlfriend this year. Happy birthday.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Happy Valentine's Day, girlfriend. I'm not going to say her name yet, but happy Valentine's Day. Yeah, I'm usually at home on Valentine's Day, single, pissed off, but not this year.
Dude, when I was married, I dreaded Valentine's Day. Believe me, after you've been with a psycho for like 13 years, and then you have to go and like do the whole song and dance, it was brutal.
Well, financially, I'm sure it's brutal for a lot of men.
No, dude, it was. I had to go fake all this crap. It sucked.
Well, basically, this was Heartbreakers Month. I was going to do kind of like people on that were controversial. Throughout different scenes who people both agreed with and disagreed with. And I had some good guests intertwined with some sleazy guests. One of the sleazy guests, we pretty much got rid of all the sleazy guests and kept the good guests in the name of integrity. So Colleen Thomas, that was completely canceled. I banned her from the scene. I don't think anyone should allow her on any radio show whatsoever. She's just a complete frothing moron, and I don't know what I was thinking when I scheduled her to be on the show. I was just going to do it just to see what would happen for my own amusement and entertaining, but I came to my senses, and we dropped lineup. Another one is Cal Korf. We dropped from the lineup. He's just got so much legal weird talking about the police stuff about Guy and so many other people that he hasn't given me any contact information. Like, I've asked him for his phone number repeatedly so we can call him to do the show. He won't give it to me, so it's just, I'm sick of it, so I just dropped him from it. And basically, we have Aaron McCollum tonight, John Ratcliffe, next week, and then Greg Bishop, and then Nick Redfern. So we rather have guests that have a bit more integrity than Colleen Thomas and the whole Korf legality thing. I got enough stuff to worry about. I don't need to be involved in some weird legality thing.
Get rid of Michael Horn, all that Billy Meyer crap.
Yeah, I got rid of Michael. I sacrificed Michael Horn. That was for you, mostly.
Dude, he brings absolutely nothing. Dude, have you ever even talked to that guy or heard him speak?
No, he seems high energy into
on himself. He's in love with himself. Dude, you'll start stabbing yourself in the eye with a pencil. I'm serious, man. Hey, you know what? You know what I think? I think he's in love with me. I think he wants a spoon with me.
I think he's in love with Michael Horn because don't they have a fight going too or something? Anyway, we usually don't talk about this soap opera stuff. We sound like two old biddies at the Waffle House tonight. So what time is it? We're going to start with our guests soon. Was there anything else? Yeah, Karen Dolan, we're going to interview her, but she's not feeling well. And then Guy had to work a lot, so we didn't want to do two interviews this weekend. We're not going to be doing two interviews anymore every weekend, just one every Saturday night at 11, and Karen Dolan will be rescheduled. So that's it on that front. Let me sit my chubby pill Nosferatu butt down and quit pacing. I have on sandals and socks because we had to shampoo the carpet, so I was walking around in sloshy carpet, and that wasn't fun at all.
Yeah, so, and breathe through your nose.
I know I'm having breathing problems too tonight. There's a weird, I rarely get, there's some kind of weird bump in the inside of my nose. Like, I never get zits or anything, but for some reason, it's like they reverse something in the inside of my nose.
Dude, it's like, it's an ingrown hair, probably, like a nose
it
hair.
Freaking hurts.
Yep.
I didn't have any ointment, so I put hemorrhoid cream on my nose.
Is it on the inside or the outside?
Inside. To the inside.
What good is hemorrhoid treatment going to do?
Carlos, I don't know. It's a cavity.
It's not going to do anything but make your nose greasier.
An orifice. But anyway, happy Valentine's, everybody. Slap the hell out of Cupid for me, and let's get this show on the road. This is, are you there, Aaron?
I sure am.
Welcome to the show. Finally here. Got here in no time. Time travels fast. No doubt about it.
Sure does.
So, basically, Aaron, I have some questions of my own. I also have some audience questions. Like, we got the most audience questions, like, ever tonight from you for some reason.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I put that on my Facebook wall, and it was just like, shoo, 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 shoo. So we'll ask you some of those. Some of them we won't. But basically, as far as your story, I'm familiar with a little bit of it from what I've, like, read around, you know, just searching about you and, you know, odds and ends, but I haven't heard the whole story from you. And I know you've been on radio shows and stuff, but I only listen to a few radio shows. I'm on dial-up because I live in the wilderness, so I don't really listen to any other radio shows, so I haven't really had a chance to actually listen to you tell your story before. So I wanted to start mostly with a question that everybody wanted me to ask you. Then I want to go into the beginning of your story and find out, you know, get into the tell, so to speak.
Sure.
Basically, one of the main questions we've been asked is, what happened to you doing the radio show? Why did you leave that exactly, and what prompted that?
Oh, okay. Well, I had started out with a small media group that had contacted me, and after meeting with them, like what they had to say, and, you know, they basically made me an offer to build this website where I would in turn, you know, it started out by just calling up friends of mine and people I knew, like, that are within a few people that have been on Project Camelot and Coast to Coast and a few other people, such as Dr. Brooks Agnew and Keenan Tilde of A Book of Insight, a few others, and just basically having them on a show to talk and interview them. But it wasn't so much of an interview. It was just kind of a sit-down conversation. But that didn't end well because I found out that it wasn't too long after that there were some ulterior motives by the people who ran the media group. So I made the decision to step away from that and kind of venture off on my own with some amazing people who are friends of mine, and we started something called the Universal Truth Evolution. I don't really want to get into details too much of why I chose to leave, but let me just say that I was getting quite aggravated with quite a number of people, and I didn't just step down from doing radio as far as being a host. I got off of the social networks. I mean, the only thing that I guess is close to me being a social network is obviously through Project Camelot, because in their forum, Carrie Cassie and the moderators create a forum page for everybody that's featured on there. But I just needed to get away because what I was realizing is that I needed to practice more of what I was saying, and that was to actually get out there more or less and be more active instead of, you know, sitting behind a desk and doing the show, which was actually Monday through Friday, 2 hours a day, or 3 hours a day, excuse me. So it was a lot of time, and I did not have the time to do what I do best, and that is getting the information as accurate as possible, working with a great group of people all around the world to try to get the truth out to as many people as possible. And simply, there was just not enough time. And at that point, I was having some personal struggles. I had a moment where I basically lost faith in humanity, and realizing that I needed to step away and take a few weeks to just take a break. But the people that worked with me on the Universal Truth Evolution, they continued on the show. The show's still on the air, and it's going very, very well. And I very much support what they're doing. But for me personally, I'm much better working behind the scenes, getting the information gathered, putting it together, and just delivering the best, most accurate information I can to everybody on everything that's going on, just using my training, my knowledge, my background, everything.
Cool. All right. Well, just curious, and they were too. I guess some of them didn't know the story completely about what happened, but
that's... Yeah, there was all kinds of rumors that came out immediately. One rumor was that I had been recruited or called, that the Illuminati had basically kidnapped me to do some rituals in December. Well, that was garbage. Other people said, oh, Aaron was taken off planet. Others said that I had been kidnapped by the CIA. It's just amazing the amount of rumors that fly over the internet without anybody, I don't know, actually contacting me, because I did leave contact information. But, you know, that's just the way it goes with the internet.
Dude, that's ufology. That's ufology to a T.
Yeah, you give them one little... Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Guy.
It will just, you know, if you don't step back and stay away from it, it will just grind you up and spit you out.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah,
so,
and all it takes is one little false seed to be planted, and it just festers way too much, and that's why, you know, for the past, I got away from it, but I don't want to talk about it. Free and I had a little conversation, private conversation, and I was expressing something that he talked about as far as a certain individual. And for, you know, I feel that it's very important that, well, let me just say, there's a lot about me that obviously I can't provide proof for, and there's many reasons for that. But what I've been doing really hard and working really hard for quite some time now is when I'm talking about a subject, let's just say chemtrails or HAARP or whatever, I have this library, this document vault that I just call the Forbidden Vault, that's got all these documents that I've acquired. So when I talk about something, when I present something on this little website that I have right now, I always put links to these documents so people can see, because I feel that it's one thing to talk about something. It's another thing to at least at the very minimum provide the best information you can. And there has seems to be in the past several months a lot of disinformation coming out, and disinformation that I, not myself, not just myself, many others, have found absolute undeniable proof to show that these certain individuals are basically spouting out lies. Problem is that they've created this image for themselves, and I don't want to target anyone individually because I try to stay away from that, but the problem is that they seem to market how they are, and people get so blindly wrapped into that that you could put a seal of approval, stamped document in front of their face, and they will be disregarded because they're caught up in a fantasy.
Yeah, well...
Yeah, man, once a rumor's out there, it's out there for good.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll take on lives of their own, and, you know, 4 years from now, it'll come up again. It's like, oh, yeah, the CIA took them.
Right.
You know. Yeah. So.
Well, Aaron, if you could, let's hear the start of your story, how it all began.
Okay. Well, I'll try to be somewhat brief, not because I don't want to talk about it, because it's kind of a long story, and hell, I did a over 2-hour interview on Project Camelot just talking about a few other things. So long story short, when I was 3 years old, I was taken to a facility I can't even begin to tell you what kind of facility it was, because this is a very early memory. And with some corroboration from a family member who shared some other information with me, so it's kind of between closer and my own memories. Well, I was taken to this facility by one of my grandmothers, and upon arriving at this place, somehow I was incapacitated. I was conscious, but I literally couldn't move. I don't know how I was paralyzed or what they did, but I was then placed into a pool of water. The next thing I remember was laying on a table, cold, wet, shaking, coughing up water, and being quite scared. That part's very vivid. And these adults standing around me who seemed to be quite pleased with the results. That was the beginning of a very interesting childhood, to say the least, where things really started to kick off then about when I was about 5 years old. Receiving already at that age some really basic survival training, a lot of hands-on training, weapons handling, learning a lot about guns, survival training, and then even more on the endurance side of it. And what I mean by that is being subjected to sensory deprivation chambers, sleep deprivation, water immersion. And things began to progress. When I would reach a certain age, then myself and the other children my age would be evaluated. And it was as simple as, if you passed, you went on to the next level. If you didn't, well, I don't know what happened to them, but there were certain points when I was growing up where there were these kids that were the only kids I was able to hang out with. And then it would almost seem overnight after we would go and do this evaluation, they'd be gone. Now, I'm not saying that they were killed or what happened, because I simply don't know. But what I do know is that they were gone, and to ask about their whereabouts was absolutely forbidden. Then this progressed more and more. There was a lot of little details of just blips of memories that I still have, and a few others that I haven't really talked about because I need to get more verification before I talk about them. So we'll just fast forward up to when I was 16. I was contacted by the government. I got this manila envelope, and it had this stamp on with my address. I opened it up, and it had some paperwork in there that told me to meet at this address in Vancouver, Washington, at a certain time and a certain date. And I did. When I arrived there, it was indeed a recruiting station, a military, U.S. military recruiting station, just like any other recruiting office that are all over the country. But when I came in and I showed the gentleman at the front my paperwork, I was taken to a back room. When I got into the back room, there were some other gentlemen there. They had this folder. It was basically my childhood dossier. And they said, based on, after a review, they had decided that I would be joining the military at 18, 2 years from that point. And that specifically I'd be joining the United States Coast Guard because that fits best for what I would be doing on both sides of the spectrum. Because there was the regular military side where I did indeed do search and rescues at heavy weather surf stations, law enforcement, anti-terrorism, drug interdiction, all that stuff. But then there was another side where I would receive quote-unquote orders to go to do training or go to be temporarily signed elsewhere, and that's when the real job would kick in. And this would basically happen back and forth. This is why I was bounced all over the place. I never stayed at one place for very long. And
Aaron, real quick.
Yeah.
Where were your parents at during all this? They were alive, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, my parents were definitely alive. This is where it gets a little interesting, where I still have questions. Now, without naming the names of my parents, because I do want to respect their anonymity, the privacy, my parents got a divorce before I turned the age of 8. And it almost seemed to happen overnight. It was very, very sudden. I have talked to my siblings about this, and we all find it a little unusual under the circumstances. And basically, my brother, my sister, and I, with our mother, were moved about 3 hours away to a town that we had no idea. And then all of a sudden, move in with this man who my mother immediately marries. And there's some more facts to this, but I've made a promise to some family members not to get into some of the circumstances. I hope you can understand that. But so we'll fast forward. Well, let's just fast forward into present time. And this may help you understand some interesting circumstances that took place.
All right.
I was visiting with my father early part of last year. We had reunited and were working on trying to create a father-son relationship. My father began to share with me some very interesting things, things that even I was a bit blown away because I was getting at least some confirmation on things I'd already suspected, such as when I asked my dad outright to just recap and tell me about the day I was born, he could not remember at all. My mother is the same way. In fact, it is not just the same for me, it's the same for my brother and my sister. When I asked about the unusual scar that I have on my head that I've had examined by doctors who none of the doctors could give me a straight answer on what it was, I again asked both sets of my parents and my dad at the time, tell me about the scar on my head, because the story I got was that it happened in some kind of accident when I was born. But here we are years later, and I ask him, and neither one could give me an answer. And in fact, my dad flat out just didn't want to talk about it. So there is still some questions with that. Received so much information from various family members and with some people that I had grown up with that I reconnected for a short time and then kind of went off the map. So let me get into this because I don't mean to ramble. Sorry.
It's fine.
I was with my dad, and we were driving from the town he lives in to another town. And I'm not saying the towns because he still lives there, and, well, there's reasons behind that. But it's in Nevada. So we're driving there, and we were just going for a drive. And I'm in the truck, and he turns to me, and he begins to tell me the story. I did not ask him or give him any reason to. I guess he just felt he needed to tell me. Well, when I was about 9 or 10 years old, at this point, I was under the assumption that my dad had pretty much just gone off the radar, disappeared. I had no idea. I hadn't seen or heard from him in about 2 years. It turns out that he had been attempting to visit with myself, my brother, my sister, and he was being prevented to do so. So my dad turns to me and he goes, you know, it got to a point where I had devised a plan. Now, again, my dad had very specialized military training in Vietnam, and he did operations that are not on the books. So he tells me that, basically, long story short, that he had made a plan to go to where we lived. He was going to get my brother, my sister, and I, and take care of any confrontations he had to by any means necessary, and that he was going to take us and go off the radar because he knew of things going on, and I guess it had just gotten to him. But his plan was intercepted in some way. Our lives were threatened, used as tools, and so then he had to open the distance again. So with that said, it was very obvious that at the very least, my dad was aware of some things that were going on when we were kids. Now, see, this, what happened to me as a child, it wasn't in plain sight. I would go to this person who I only remember as being Mike, and this guy had befriended my dad. And I would go there for weekends. I would go there for little camping trips with the other kids in my group. And this was a place that was just known as camp, where this is where the training would take place. So, of course, my parents are under the assumption that we're going to this. And we lived down the country, so this guy had quite a few acres of land. bring our tents, go camping, but that wasn't really what was taking place. So I guess I hope that kind of answers what you were your question.
Yes, it does.
My mother, and let me just say, my mother, when I don't talk to her anymore, but when I was first trying to really get some answers, anytime I would ask my mother to tell me about events when I was a kid, she either couldn't recall it or she couldn't give me a straight story. And when I would ask her to tell me about my family history, she knew nothing beyond her grandparents, or she wouldn't tell me. There's a lot of mystery in my family that I still haven't been able to get any answers to.
Sad. I mean, it sounds like to me like maybe your dad signed you up for something. That's never been, have you ever asked him that? Like, hey, Dad, did you sign
me
up?
No, I didn't ask him that, but the thing is that I was able to gather some records on my dad's side of the family, and there are some very interesting things that when you lay them all out and you look at it, I mean, first off, my grandfather on my dad's side, who I never met, he died killed, I don't know what you want to call it, because I have an obituary that says 1963, and then I have a funeral certificate that says 1964. Nobody, including my grandmother, went to the funeral, apparently. I just found out earlier last year that my grandmother, still the one that took me to the facility when I was three, is still very much alive. I was under the assumption, because I was told that she was dead. It turns out that she's been in hiding for well over 20 years. My grandfather served in the Navy and Naval Intelligence. There are some interesting traces that may have led him as being part of certain clandestine op during World War II, but again, I don't have absolute confirmation on that. This is just a lead that I'm still working on. My father, actually, I'm not sure if you're familiar with a person, David Corso.
Yes.
Yes.
My father and Dave Corso reunited with me present early last year, and it turns out that those two, not exactly were on the same team, but have more than once during the Vietnam era, and both serving in the Marine Corps. So that was interesting, because then I sat down and I wound up learning more about my father in 30 minutes with him sitting there talking to Dave Corso than I had really ever known my entire life. So it's not a cut and dry thing. There's so many twists and turns that just when I think I'm reaching an aha moment, I wind up completely railroaded to find out that one of the pieces of information that I thought I uncovered about my family was a lie or was placed there purposely to try to divert me. Some reason on both sides of the family, and both my grandfathers and fathers died under very unusual circumstances within a year of each other, I find out that everything that I was told about my family beyond my grandparents was not true, with one exception. I know that I come from the McCullum bloodline, but on my mother's side, it turns out that it's not the bloodline that I was told. So I deal with a lot on my plate as far as just that, let alone everything else I'm trying to do.
So where does Seagate fit in? That's one of the big things in the dolphin scenario. What is that?
You know, it's funny about that, Jeffrey. Let me just say this real quick. I know there's a lot of buzz on the internet about Aaron McCullum, the dolphin-human hybrid. And let me just say this. I never actually said that I was a dolphin-human hybrid. What I had told people was that there seems to be some trace of evidence leading towards an unusual surgical procedure that happened while I was in my mother's womb. In fact, there are absolutely zero medical records or anything, even birth, with the exception of a birth certificate that I now have. But what I had tried to explain to people in my very first interview, which I've learned a lot more since then, is a lot of my training as a kid, during the summer times, I spent my summers down in Southern California between Catalina Island, San Clemente, and occasionally San Diego. And when I was down at these places, I was working a lot with dolphins. And this seemed to be something that was common throughout, through different points of my growing up and even my military career. Project Seagate came along in the right about midway in my time in service before I was blacklisted or burned, as it's called. And that was what, from everything I can gather, and a couple of things I was told, that was the actual operation that by design I had been groomed for. But I know that, go ahead.
So the operation was just like, what is Operation Seagate? It's just like a dolphin, educational program to find out about dolphins. Is there actually any kind of hybrid thing? Is that just like, there seems to be a lot of, with the communication about that subject, humor involved. So that's where you're telling us the root of it, pretty much, where that, speculation came from. But Seagate, basically, what is that operation? It's just find out about dolphins. What does it do?
Dolphins are only one part of it, but they do play a big part. There are three underwater slash above ground facilities in the Caribbean that are owned and operated by the United States government. One, which is actually very well known and can be seen from certain vantage points, is AUTEC, which is actually, Jeffrey, down in your neck of the woods, down by Binney Island, which they deal with a lot of highly advanced underwater submersibles, amongst other things. And then there is another smaller facility down in the Lesser Antilles, down closer towards the U.S. Virgin Islands in the area of St. Thomas. And then the final one is off of the west coast of Puerto Rico, which is Project Seagate is not, from what I've learned, again, I've learned a lot from some investigations I've done since my first interview. Project Seagate was just one of the projects there. I don't actually know the name of the base, but what I do remember is that we used to just call PROSE for short. Military likes to shorten things up with a lot of words. So there were three main things that happened at PROSE, at Project Seagate. One was a project that is under something larger known as the Omega that deals with basically genetic manipulation, hybrid programs, such as one that Dr. Bill Deagle talks about, at least separate from what I witnessed. What I witnessed was a dolphin-human hybrid program, and there was a lot of experiments done. Now, I'm not a scientist. I don't have a doctorate. I was just a soldier, so all I can really tell you is what I saw, and what I saw was some pretty unimaginable stuff that was going on. And it wasn't exactly, there weren't humanoids walking around that had a flipper, and there weren't dolphins swimming around that could talk. It wasn't like that at all. What it was to develop in certain things. So you imagine developing a soldier who doesn't suffer from hypothermia or who can actually change his body temperature, such as dolphins can do. Imagine a dolphin who are already very, very smart, but imagine a dolphin who has a little bit more capabilities that they couldn't without perhaps some genetic manipulation from humans. So there was a little bit of a mix in there of things. Another one that they were working on that I absolutely do remember was a dolphin. When a dolphin sleeps, they don't sleep like a human. What they do is they pick a spot, and then they'll shut off the right side of their brain because they use both sides. The right side of the brain will then go into a sleep stasis. Once that has rested, they switch to the left. So just imagine a human, a soldier, who could operate that way, where they can still be on the go with just half of their system shut down but still be almost fully operational. The other operation that was going on there was, again, just as many other bases, they had their own program of working on some very highly advanced, deep underwater submersibles. Puerto Rico itself has a very large amount of USO, unidentified submersible objects, sighted all over that island. Most don't even make it to any kind of reports in the United States. There seems to be almost, not, I don't want to say a blackout, but there's definitely a smoke screen going on there.
So when it comes to the dolphin situation,
yeah.
I know I've read in some like UFO type books, or maybe like a long time ago in my earlier 20s, like light worker books and stuff about dolphin, like a race of dolphin alien hybrids or whatever. So that you had me like kind of thinking about that a lot when you were talking about all that. I don't know if that's true or not, but I've read that. But my question is too.
Mm-hmm.
From the UFO perspective, have you had a lot of sightings or experiences revolving around UFO phenomenon?
Well, I've definitely had my share inside when I was working within the military, and even since then, since December 21st of 2005, when I showed up, I don't want to say show up, obviously I got there somehow, but when I kind of snapped out of it at the Portland, Oregon International Airport, December 21st, 2005, even as recently as I think the last unusual sighting, and I'm not going to say it was something off-plan because there's a lot of UFO sightings are actually military aircraft, but I've seen my share.
So when did you decide to start talking about this publicly on such a level, and were you met with any outside forces saying, hey, you need to shut up at all or anything like that?
Yeah, this wasn't an easy decision at the beginning of what had happened was, June of 2008. I was approached by a gentleman who identified himself and showed me his identification, and he was a he was a captain in the Marine Corps who worked for, obviously, Naval Intelligence, because Naval Intelligence operates within the Marines also. And he had, at this point, I was once again pretty much homeless. I was not homeless. I mean, a friend of mine, the only friend I had at the time, was letting me sleep on his couch. And I really didn't have any direction. I had no money. And what little income, I couldn't get a job anywhere. No one would take me. Without giving really any reason. And I mean any job. I mean, like, even picking up a shovel and digging dirt, nothing. So I was at this place in Pasadena, California, where I was living, and I was approached by this gentleman, Scott Seidner. I'll say his name because, for all I know, I don't know where he's at. He disappeared. And I was given an offer, and next thing you know, I'm in a truck heading down to Camp Pendleton in California, and I meet with a gentleman, General Robert Regale. I sit down at the desk, and I'm in civilian clothes, and he pulls out this folder and starts to read off some things, almost like a resume of mine is what he was reading, of some operations and some experiences, some training I'd received, said that I'd come highly recommended, and he said he had a job for me. And what that job was a group of individuals within and retired and not so retired from special operations in the military to become part of a more civilian version of the Marine Force Recon, but not going into the jungles or not doing necessarily that kind of clandestine work, but more on the side of executing on smaller scales what's known as a false flag operation inside and outside of the country. This went on until about, I think it was February. It was February of 2009, in the middle of February, where I had come across some documents that I had read that I still only have 22 pages left because my place I was living got raided 3 times. The cops wouldn't touch me. They didn't want to have anything to do with me. No matter how many times I called them, because I was trying to report to get some kind of record of this, my computer was hacked, and one computer actually fizzled out in front of me. Cell phones, I couldn't keep a cell phone. I was being followed. There was all kinds of stuff going on. And once again, I was blacklisted because the document that I had and still have was military threats and strategy through 2015. It talked about possible enemies. It talked about the Star Wars program. It talked about labeling new terrorists. Quite an interesting document that I've actually given to quite a number of people to review. So what happened here was I was, again, blacklisted. The place that I was living was being...
Aaron, can I interrupt you for a second?
Yeah, absolutely.
There are a lot of think tanks and groups, private groups that, you know, contract for the government.
Yeah.
That actually prepare those types of documents.
Yes.
And they're... like what-if scenarios. Like the whole Iraqi war was prepared in like 1992.
Right.
That entire plan. So do you think that maybe those documents could have been something a think tank or some group put together as a what-if scenario and not necessarily fact?
Well, I would not rule that out, and here's why. The document, and I wish I had it in front of me because I didn't know I'd be talking about it, and I do have a hard copy kept safe. I don't remember his name, but it was drafted by a rear admiral, and this was drafted in, I think it was 1999 or 2000, and it was presented before the Joint Chiefs in the Pentagon. I would not say that it was an absolute, like, this is going to happen, because you're right, a lot of think tanks, but there are a lot of documents that are drafted that are more of, more of think tank type documents. Like, you can use this as a reference, more considered like a reference document that maybe they'd go to later on. Absolutely. Yeah, I would not rule that out at all. But it doesn't change the fact that those who I were working for a short time were very unhappy that I took the document home with me.
Right.
But yeah, that's a very good point, Guy. Very good point. I mean, I would definitely not rule that out. In fact, I haven't even looked over the document in depth for a little while myself, which, I probably should review it with everything that I've been working on the past year and go back to that and see what I can gather from it. So, okay, so I just, I got off the track. I'm sorry, guys. So basically,
there is no track. It's okay.
Okay, so what happened was the place I was living was funded by them. I was living, eating off of the money that I was getting from the government at this point, and it all got cut off. And there I am again, homeless and pretty angry, So what I did was, again, I was staying with this friend of mine, and I drafted an email to the general. And what I said was, you know what, I'm done. I proposed an agreement. You guys or whoever, just leave me alone. Don't bother me. Don't bother anybody I know, and I will disappear. I will leave the country. You will never see me even on the internet. I won't own a cell phone. I will completely disappear. I will completely integrate into a culture somewhere, and you will never hear from me again. Do this and we're fine. Do not and we'll have a problem. That's paraphrasing what I wrote to him. About 3 weeks later, I was involved in a hit and run. And when I woke up in the hospital the next morning, I was told that, obviously this was in downtown Pasadena. I was walking across the street. It was said that the car had been going about anywhere from 35 to 40 miles an hour. Obviously, there were a lot of people around. The cops showed up. I'm told the cops showed up. Yet, there was no police report. And even when I went to check out of the hospital, I couldn't get any records, nothing. That, to me, just based on my experience, tells me that that was maybe not an attempt on my life, but it was certainly trying to send a message. So, finally... after some advice from some people, I decided to contact Project Camelot. And I actually met with Carrie Cassie on numerous occasions, sat down face-to-face to just share some stuff with her. And so what it comes down to is that my original motive was definitely revenge. I wanted to try to do what I could to expose those who, by design, made me who I was. And, you know, I never had really had a childhood. almost 3 decades of my life were not mine, and I was pretty mad. But, of course, as time went on, those motives turned into something better, to just do what I can to use my experience, to use my knowledge, and to use people inside and outside of many different industrial complexes that I have got in contact with to try to educate people, whether they want to listen to it or not. And I know there's a lot of people out there that think that I'm just some idiot trying to get attention, which is not the case. I don't ask for money. I don't want fame, don't want fortune. Just trying to do my part because I feel that it's right. And in a way, with all the bad things that I did, this is kind of a way for me to pay back to society in a way. And yes, there have been a couple of other visitations that I've had from some not so friendly people, some physical altercations. In fact, a week before I did the second project, Camelot interview, I did wind up in a really nasty altercation with 2 gentlemen that decided to come pay me a visit. And then it was not too long after that when I met such people like Jordan Maxwell, Dr. Bill Deagle, and others who all separately said, Aaron, if you're going to do this, you need to be as loud and as clear as possible. And so this is why I don't turn down being on a radio show if they want me to talk about these things and even current events. That's mainly what I've been doing the past, 4 or 5 months, is talking about the current things going on and just kind of using my experience and my knowledge to help decipher a lot of the stuff that's happening kind of under the table.
So, Aaron, you say you got hit by a car?
Yeah, I did.
Was there like an ambulance and nothing like that at all? Or
No. Yes, an ambulance did show up. I do remember laying on the ground, a little bit fuzzy because I hit my head pretty bad. But, yeah, in fact, the one thing I do remember is that when they were putting me in the stretcher, I was telling them to just leave me be. But I didn't want to really create a scene because at this point, I didn't want to make a scene is basically what it was. I was never one to really want to stick out. I was always kind of like at my best being quiet and being in the shadows without sounding too dramatic. But it was a very unusual situation. Now, I don't have any absolute proof that was a direct code red hit on me or anything. But at that point, you have to understand that with everything that was going on, I was so angry, so aggravated, that was the turning point for me.
Hey, Aaron, I read online tonight when I was searching on Google that you have webbed toes. Is that true?
Oh, God. Another one of those rumors. Let me check my toes again. Nope, they're not webbed. And also, Jeffrey, no, I don't have gills.
No blowhole, nothing like that?
No. If I had a blowhole, I'm pretty sure that my wife would have already found out. No blowhole, no webbed toes, none of that.
I believe you're telling the truth about something, but there's a comedy angle. It could be a Rob Schneider movie.
I can appreciate that because, like I said, guys, for me to share my experiences, I don't expect anyone to believe me, to be honest with you. It's just I'm telling it like the best that I remember. But if it plants a seed for one person to perhaps look at something that may answer some of their own questions, then I feel like I've accomplished something.
And then, I see all the stuff that you're involved with, like, the BP oil spill, and there's so many other, things that you're involved with and active in. It's hard to, you know, for me just to say, oh, he's making it up, when I see you being so passionate about other things. So it kind of doesn't fit the psychological profile a little bit. But, yeah, it's a lot to take in, but, I mean, I'm definitely not ruling it out as not happening to you, that's for sure.
And you know what? And honestly, that's the best response I could get from someone, Jeffrey. Just saying that is fine because, in fact, I always encourage people to challenge me because that just tells me that the brain's working. And if they go and explore and it branches off to other things, that's great.
You know, Aaron, my issue isn't so much with your story.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that could be anything. You could have a different set of memories planted in there, and, you know, and you're thinking you're a super soldier when it was something else, you know.
Right.
My problem is where you chose to go and come out.
What do you mean? You're talking about the Gulf of Aden. Okay, let me explain.
No. I'm talking about Project Camelot itself.
Oh, using that as my platform for going public. That's what you're asking, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I personally think that was a very bad choice.
Understand. And you're not the first person to tell me that.
You know, these people, Carrie is she's a media consultant for Hollywood.
I'm familiar with Carrie's background, yes, but let me just...
Hold on, dude. If you look at that site, it's completely psychologically appeasing to people when they look at it.
Okay.
If you go to, like, normal UFO sites and that sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
you know what you're looking at. When you first pull up Project Camelot, you got to start reading everything to even see what it's about. It's all sorts of symbolism, whether it's just the aesthetic colors, whether it's the, you know, the project which makes it sound official. You got Camelot, which is noble and, you know, strong, aside from the adultery. And, you know, and it's got a tiger on there. It's all side.
Hello?
Hey.
I thought Guy got cut off. I'm sorry.
I know.
Can I respond to that?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. I understand what you're saying, and by no means am I here to talk down about any of these websites. Let me just explain this. When it was by a close friend of mine who was already in this, you know, call it the truth movement, whatever you want to call it. He was very much awake and to things such as chemtrails, UFOs, and all that sort of, all those topics. And he came to me and said, when I was just thinking about, you know, how am I, you know, I wanted to go public. He goes, well, check out this website. I checked it out. I watched several of the interviews just randomly. I can't even tell you, remember which ones they were. I found it interesting. And at this point, you know, I wasn't a person that listened to Coast or looked at any ufology websites. I did nothing like that. So I saw this. I thought, well, this is a good starting point. So I wrote an email to the on the contact page. I had no idea if I was getting a hold of Bill or Carrie. And it was about 2 days later, Carrie responded to me. And I did it, and I went on there. So, and I really don't want to get into talking down about any websites. I understand what you're saying about symbology, but you know, symbology is embedded so deeply in everything that people need to sometimes try to look beyond that and listen to what maybe an individual is saying and catches what resonates with them. And that's just what I have to say about that.
The thing is it's the content it's, I mean, you go on there and it's almost like it's the weekly world news, dude. Really.
And I will say, you know, there have been some people that have been interviewed on Project Camelot that I've even discussed with Carrie about, that I found very, I was wondering, why was this person chosen to be interviewed? I'm not above saying, and there have been people that have been interviewed on there that I absolutely do disagree with. But is it my place to go to Carrie and say, you shouldn't have interviewed this person? No, it's not, because I'm trying to just be the best person I can without picking apart too much of that kind of thing, because I don't want to get wrapped into that. I did the interviews. I don't regret them, but I definitely have, as far as delivering the information and being the person I am now, a year later, the interviews would have been different than they would have been now. I'll just say that.
All right, dude. I'm not trying to bust your balls or nothing. I'm just letting you know that you know, it's muddy water, and the, you know, you may have some elements of truth in there. Then there's a bunch of crap, and it becomes almost like a fundamentalist site, and you're lumped in with all of that.
Well,
my advice to you, Aaron, would be to disassociate yourself with all of that and just be Aaron McCollum.
Well, that's what I've been doing now. I'm just being Aaron McCollum. I'm just trying to do the best I can with looking into things like the Gulf oil spill, like Jeffrey talked about, or such things as the research I've been doing into with chemtrails and all of that. And that's what I am. I am just Aaron McCollum. Do I consider myself being absolutely partial or affiliated with any website or organization? No. I've never been the kind to be part of the club. I'm just who I am, and if people don't like it, well, they don't have to listen to me.
Well, the thing
you are now, and you're getting them clicks. So,
I'm not in any clicks, guy. I am not in any clicks.
No. You're getting them click-throughs, like for advertising.
Oh, I got you. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, well, is it time for break?
No, I'm not getting nothing from Joe. It is time for break. All right, Joe. Take us away.
We're going to take a 10-minute break. Just stay by your Skype or whatever, Aaron.
Okay.
Hanging around downtown by myself, and I had so much time to sit down and think about myself, and then there she was, like double cherry pie. Yeah, there she was, like disco superfly. I smell sex and can end it here. Who's that lounging in my chair? Who's that casting devious stares in my direction? Mama, this surely is a dream. Yeah, mama, this surely. Yeah.
welcome back to the Church of Mavis Radio. Anywho, we're back with Aaron McCollum, coming at you live. So, Aaron, basically, let's get into the subject of, I know you left your radio show because of some problems that you had, but how does the element of people who are out there wanting a leader on some in some fashion or form and kind of expecting that out of you, and, you know, how does that affect your outlook on leaving and everything when that happened?
Well, obviously when I was in the military, I got to a point where I had a leadership role. You know, I had people that worked under me, and for situation because of the way the military is structured. What I was noticing with the Universal Truth Evolution, and even before that, when I was pretty much doing a news feed on Facebook, I don't want to say all, but I'm not underestimating, I'd say probably about 90% of the people who were listening to the radio shows I was doing or following me on Facebook were a bunch of, as I call, armchair activists. And I even had a few contact me, believe it or not, saying, you know, Aaron, when are you going to start a compound where we can go and train under you and follow you? And this was very alarming to me because, as I've always preached, you know, I don't really consider myself in that role now of being a leader. I mean, am I a person that's trying to make some noise and do my part to educate people? Yes, but so are many, many others. Just as this radio show with you guys do, this platform is doing the same thing. What I wanted and what I still want is people to stand shoulder to shoulder with me, okay? I want people who are willing to stop with the whole, well, I'm just going to listen to everything you say and not look anywhere else. If all people are doing is listening to everything I have to say and going to do their own research to verify what I've said, then they themselves, and yes, this is true, they're what I call the sheeple within the truth movement. You have what, like, were known as the sheeple or the mind-controlled people that watch mainstream media, that eat all the crap at fast food places, that drink the fluoridated water. And then you have that group of people within the truth movement who basically just tune into one source. Everything they listen to, they figure, okay, that's got to be the end all, and that's it. And that really, really frustrated me, absolutely frustrated me, because I've never claimed, nor will I ever claim to have all the answers, to be an expert. I'm not an expert in anything. The moment someone says they're an expert, I feel like they have, they're full of it, because you never stop learning. So, in a way, part of my reasons for stepping away from being this host of all, and also being on Facebook, was step away to see what people would do. Oh, my God, Aaron McCollum has disappeared. What am I going to do? And a lot of people were kind of running around circles and running into walls. I hate to sound so blunt and perhaps rude, but that's just what it is. And you know, I don't mix words. I don't mince words. I tell like it is. If people don't like it, then that's fine. People need to be their own individuals. And if anyone out there who's listening to this, if you just follow one source of information, you're not being of service to yourself, and you're just wrong. You're doing it wrong, and I guess that's what I have to say about that.
So yeah, I mean, a lot of people on Facebook are sit around and complain about everything and are not doing anything about it. I mean, nonstop in every genre or field. My take is that's good that you're so involved, and you know, and all these different things. And, of course, I do believe these radios are for raising awareness, and
yes,
many of us are messengers, and that's why we're here. That's me and Guy have had paranormal and UFO type experiences, and that's what led us to doing the show to find out more about it. And
listen, Aaron, hold on,
make
Jeff.
Money doing the show, and you know, we barely get by, but we do it to learn more about it, and plus it's just so fascinating, and I love it to learn from every guest that comes on here, and it's like by learning from them on some level, it puts a piece of the puzzle together towards my story to find out more. So that's kind of, you know, why I do it. But
Hey, Aaron, listen.
Yeah.
My experiences in my life that I've had that were just so intense and intense. There is no word for it, and it didn't even involve UFOs. But I don't have any proof of it. If I was to go and say all these things that have happened to me, people would be like, right, dude, you know, like out of a movie, you know.
Right.
So I kind of understand where you're coming from, in a sense, but these people have always been around since the 50s. They're not going to go away. They are the UFO fundamentalists. You need to walk out on the edge, and you need to not associate with them at all, because they are the ones that totally make this whole genre, whether it be paranormal or whatever, they make it a joke.
Well, I do agree that there is a problem, definitely with that. To say that it will never go away, I mean, I wouldn't go that far. We don't know what the future holds for us. Who knows what's going to happen? I certainly don't. I mean, do you guys know what's going to happen 2 years from now or a year from now? I mean, let's be honest.
Dude, I've been in this scene for a while, in the background.
Okay. No, I understand that. What I'm trying to get, I'm not saying that you're absolutely wrong. All I'm saying is that I try to be an optimistic these days. And there was an old saying that in the service I was in, plan for the worst, hope for the best. Okay. And I'm definitely a realist when it comes to that. I live by those words daily. I plan for the worst. This is why I have this kind of more of a information news type of website thing called Truth Survival, where I don't just talk about things like UFOs and the BP oil spill and elitist groups, but I also bring to the table stuff like herbal gardens and how to build and hide stuff in your place, like, you know, secret hiding spots and water storage and food storage and medical supplies, first aid, all this kind of stuff, simply because I'm trying to cover both sides of the spectrum to just let people know, hey, you know, things aren't looking too good right now in this country and globally otherwise, and that's for another time as far as with the economic system, the food and everything else. So this is why I haven't taken a new direction. I've just evolved this direction I'm in as far as trying to give people the tools to expand on what they're doing now. And hopefully in time, these people that you were referring to will wake the hell up, take a good look at around them, and why would you say no?
Because I know human nature.
Well, and so do I.
I know people. I watch people. All I've done is watch people all my life. I know if someone, like one of my friends, has had one beer, I can change. I know in just the most subtle changes in people. Okay? People are the same. We've been exactly the same for over 5,000 to 6,000 years. Just our technology's better. We still do the same things to each other. We're exactly the same, Aaron. We have not changed.
So are you saying that there's no room? Are you saying that there's no room for improvement?
No, I'm not. I'm not saying that at all.
Okay, because this is what I'm trying to guys. This is what I'm trying to express. What I'm trying to say is, look, I agree. People, the majority of people, there's definitely a problem. Okay, we cannot deny that there's definitely a problem, but I've seen absolute worst that humanity has to offer, and I've seen the absolute best. I'm trying to go for somewhere in the middle, you know, a little halfway point to see at least, if nothing, a 1% improvement of the thought process and the intentions and the will to learn more from people. This is why I never tell anybody that they have to listen to me. I don't do an Alex Jones thing. Yes, I went there. I don't do an Alex Jones thing where it's, listen to me or you're going to die. You know, they're after your woman's fetuses and all that crap. I just simply bring up the information, and I basically lay the cards on the table, and I step away, and I say, there are the cards. You're free to look through them. There's no pressure. You do what you want, and then I move on with hope that maybe one person will have one seed planted within them that perhaps will become contagious with others.
And that's a noble attitude, Aaron. I mean, and
thank you.
I'm the same way. You know, it's an individual thing, but like what you said earlier, people are sheep. They're sheep. Our attention span is roughly maybe 2 months. Nobody's talking about the oil spill. Nobody's talking about anything of these horrible things that are happening.
Right.
Egypt, everybody's already forgotten about Egypt, you know.
Well, you know what? It's funny you mentioned that because just in the past several days, I did a very long report, an update of the Gulf oil spill, and I've been doing regular posts about Egypt because I've seen that, and I expressed how what the hell's wrong with people in this country that they've just almost collectively allowed the BP thing to be swept under the carpet. It's an atrocity, and I'm
Dude,
telling you.
They don't care. They don't
well,
care.
Guy,
it didn't affect,
I understand that.
It didn't affect their cable bill. It didn't affect them watching American Idol. It didn't affect them these little things that they think are important in their life.
But what about the small percentage that do care?
Then they got to carry the flag for the rest of us, and that's
right.
The way it's always been. It's the way it's always been.
But
since 6,000 years ago.
But it leaves with it. But there's always room for growth and for improvement. It's just
sure.
It's there. It is there. It's there. It's just locked away so damn tight that we've got a lot of work to do.
We got to evolve.
We do. We need to evolve. Listen, I'm just as frustrated as you are, Guy, about the state that this country's in. I agree with you that completely. I have days where I am so pissed that I find myself just ranting, and thankfully my wife will sit there and let me rant because I just get so pissed. But then I'll get an email or I'll get a message from someone who I've never talked to before from Sweden or Nigeria, whatever, saying, look, I read something that you wrote or I listened to this, or maybe that doesn't have anything to do with me. Maybe they heard something else and they got in contact with me and they simply say something of, you know, thank you. This has been assistance in some way. That alone is enough to motivate me to keep doing what I'm doing, because as much of the most worst of humanity that I've seen all across this globe, I do see a tiny spark of hope with that very small percentage. And I, for one, I'm just saying this, me personally, will not give up ever on this, because I care about this planet as a whole. I'm not saying you don't. I'm just speaking for myself. I care about this planet as a whole. I see the potential. We saw the potential. Egypt's case in point. We saw the potential. The potential's here. The problem is that with this country, is that parents are more happy to put their kids in front of a computer playing World of Warcraft. Grown adults are more happier to living a cyber life in that atrocity called Second Life. The whole thing with virtual reality and artificial intelligence has completely infiltrated our society to where people have now this luxury to live, work, eat at home. I'm surprised we don't have more albinos running around that, you know, barely catch the sunlight because they got to go do something.
It's easy. It's because it's easy.
You're
Aaron.
Right, but we need to make it difficult for them. This is why, and let me just say this right now, and I've gotten a lot of flack for this, but I don't care. There is a big part of me that wants a huge economic collapse to happen in this country so that people are forced to actually go and meet people in person. They watch football. They can't watch Fox News. I think that that would be a complete cleansing. It would be a colon cleansing of what we have with the society here in this country, and we need it badly, or we are screwed.
Yeah, we kind of need – I'm even more extreme than that. I'm more of a George Carlin take on it.
George Carlin's one of my favorites.
Yeah, I think we need more of a natural catastrophe, something that will just shake us as a species to our core. That is what we need. We need something that is just going to bitch slap the entire world, not just New Orleans, you know, not just, you know, it's got to be global and it's got to be bad, to just really, you know, wake up.
I see what you're saying, and this is where I'm torn. This is the part where I'm torn, and I'll tell you why, because...
See, I don't really like people that much, because...
Well, that's like...
Hey, Guy.
Yeah.
Guy.
Yeah.
Guy.
What?
Do me a favor real quick and make sure the MavisIncarnate.com site is up right now, because a staff member just called, and usually when he calls this late at night, it's not good. So if you could just tell me that, because I can't check in any way.
I'm looking at the Mavis right now, Jeffrey.
MavisIncarnate.com?
Yeah, I'm looking out right now. I'm looking at the chat room.
Okay, it looks fine.
It's scrolling just fine.
Refresh. All right. Because usually when he calls, it's some kind of news. So it kind of froze me for a second. But, yeah, I mean, most of the things you are talking about that's going to shake up this world, I agree, too. And I'm like, you know, but on some level, I don't know, it's just probably going to all lead back to cannibalism.
No, I don't
eating together and Mad Max.
I've got something to like, hey, these other things, like your big screen TVs and all this stuff, and they're not important. It's not important.
Here's something that I found interesting lately. You know, we interviewed Peter Kling about the Armageddon and the Christian, you know, biblical approach to the end of the world, and he has this strange alien-like twist to it all. And basically, you know, we got into the rift that's supposed to happen, you know, in December 2012 and all that stuff, supposedly. But also, some type of purification by fire is spoken about by, you know, the Christian religion. But anyway, when we interviewed Mary Redstar recently, she also, the natives believe that there's going to be some kind of purification by fire. Not all of them, but it was just weird that these two different thoughts believe that we're approaching a time that's, you know, even the Mayans with the rift situation, no matter what you think or knows that's going to happen December 21st, 2012, there is a planetary alignment that occurs that day that's supposed to be very, very unique that most assuredly could possibly cause, you know, before, after, or during some ecological freaking weirdness.
So how would it cause that, Jeff?
Do what now?
How would it cause that?
An alignment that only happens every 36,000 years?
Yeah, how would that cause problems on Earth?
I guess because the alignment's unique and it causes gravitational problems or something to that effect. Right now there's a lot of strange magnetic pole shift stuff going on that's just bizarre in the media lately. That's just freaking...
It's all natural stuff. It's all natural stuff that happens. It's happened many, many times over the course of the Earth's history. The poles will just change. Nothing bad happens. You just got to readjust stuff. Yeah, the airport's got to readjust. The compasses are different. I mean, that's
how
it,
often does
I mean,
that happen, though? How often does that happen?
I think the last time was around the last ice age.
Yeah.
When that happened. But it wasn't because of the ice age.
So if it happens again, is there going to be an ice age type global coming of a global superstorm?
Whatever art.
Their Armageddon. It's a possibility, and I guess the only way we're going to find out is to get there and go through it, really.
All right, Aaron, continue with what you were saying. I'm sorry. We kind of jumped in there.
Oh, it's all right. Actually, I was going to comment on what you guys were saying.
That would be great. Please do.
Yeah, you know, the whole thing, these doomsdayers, here's another situation. One thing I do see, and again, I don't make predictions. I also know human nature quite well. What I am seeing happening, and not seeing as in a premonition, just from based on human nature and everything that's happened the past couple of years, as we get closer to 2012, we're going to see a lot more cults pop up. Maybe cults are just underground right now. And I think that by design, unfortunately, we're going to have a lot of groups that are going to drink that magic punch because they are under some assumption that that will be their gateway into a higher realm or whatever. I don't subscribe to the doomsday theory at all. Planet alignments, galactic alignments, happen a lot more often than people are aware of.
Happen every year.
Yes, they do, absolutely, and sometimes more. Last year we had three of those, that unusual, I don't remember what it's called, but the full moon. Anyways, you're right, it happens all the time. Now, are some more intense than others? But do I think that the Earth is going to tip on its axis on that exact day? I'm more inclined to say no, but there is factual evidence that the poles are shifting slightly. The North Magnetic North Pole has slowly been creeping into the Russian Siberian desert. In fact, it's been coming, it's so much that airports all over the country are having to do slight alterations of the numbering system on the runways, which align directly with the magnetic north. This is something that's absolutely true. But is it going to be just we're going to wake up one day and it's going to be like that movie I never saw. I just saw the preview, that Abomination 2012 movie, which was nothing but fear-mongering. And I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but I am pretty darn sure that both my feet will still be planted on the ground the following day.
Well, Aaron, what is your take on all of these these FEMA camps being set up? It seems like, what do you think our government's preparing for right now on some level with all of that?
The government's always preparing for something, Jeffrey. Later part of last year, there was this massive nuclear catastrophe training exercise that happened. Maryland, I believe it was Augusta, Georgia, and in Florida, I think more up by Jacksonville in that area. These things are always going on. This year, right now, excuse me, we have Unify 2011, which is basically this year-long war game that the Department of Defense is doing. And it's incorporating all kinds of things. One of the big things that they are doing is training soldiers for civil unrest. There are absolute documents that I found kind of hidden in plain sight. They're on the FEMA website, another military website. You just got nowhere to dig. They talk about things like the Army Civilian Labor Inmate Program, certain executive orders that FEMA has. But right now, currently, what's happening with FEMA is they're doing a lot of gearing up for – they just purchased somewhere in the area of 750 – may not be that high – several hundred million meals ready to eat, underwater body bags, which were used in Katrina, and wool blankets and so forth, and they've been gearing up a lot of their people around the area of the New Madrid fault line. Now, this kind of goes into a report I just did about the Gulf of Mexico with the Deep Horizon oil rig. They basically punctured a very deep hole into a fissure that is indirectly interconnected with the new mine, which has caused a tremendous amount of seismic activity. Now, right now, you can look on FEMA's website, and they've even put out this child video game to prepare for earthquakes that was produced by the University of Oklahoma, if I remember right. So there are a lot of things gearing up.
I just saw this article a few days ago, something about an alien invasion preparation section in the FEMA book.
I haven't seen anything like that, but if you found something... I know.
I'm not saying it's completely true, but I did see that. That's true.
Pretty
compelling.
If you could email that to me, Jeffrey, at some point, I'd like to review that.
Firemen in their handbooks even have that. Listen, their job is to prepare for everything. For literally everything.
Right.
They have disaster recovery plans for just about every single scenario you can think of.
Yes.
There's some schools training, right? Children like drills for alien invasion drills. Like it's like the nuclear war communist thing now. Like I saw that.
They do it for tsunamis.
FEMA has contracted with under the Department of Homeland Security, Homeland Security officers that are specifically trained in response to nuclear, biological, chemical, radiation catastrophes. They do. They cover everything you can imagine. They cover everything. But it's When you give an organization that much power, like in there, I have copies of 14 executive orders that, if they were executed, gives the FEMA all kinds of rights, shutting down ports, airports, confiscation, literally shutting down banks, everything, shutting down everything pretty much. It's pretty alarming stuff to look at, but people need to be aware of that.
And it needs to be there. It needs to be there because people do not behave. Listen, if we could live and walk around without laws, I would be upset that those orders would be, put into place.
Well,
but we can't.
I don't think we should live in a lawless land either, because a lawless land means absolute chaos.
No. I mean a law without land. I mean that we behave. We don't need laws because, we're good people.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood you. Yes, I do agree with what you said. I do agree with that. Sorry. What I was going to say is that the amount. The constriction, the suffocation on our absolute rights is so spun out of control, and there's been a few shows where I just went off about this, where it's based, when are these people going to say they've had enough? I mean, it's blatant now what's going on with so many different things. Trust me on this one. I don't know when, but it's not going to be too long before full-body scanners and intrusive pat-downs will be in schools, shopping centers, and anywhere else where there is a massive amount of people all the time. We're going to that. The whole let me just say this real quick. You know, Jen Napolitano, or I call her Darth Napolitano, came out with that whole see something, say something, police state crap with big box corporation Walmart, okay? So now you got all these Walmart employees who think they've been deputized by the federal government. God help us all with that one. Let's go back in the past a little bit. Let's go back to Cambodia, where Pol Pot. Are you guys familiar with who Pol Pot was?
Oh yeah, he was awesome until he got power.
until he killed anywhere, it's reported anywhere from 1.5 to 1.7 million people. Do you know what he implemented with all of the village chiefs? He told them that if they, and here's some of the things that he had listed. If a person did not give their cow enough water, if someone was eating too much food, he had all these rules. If the chief or if any of the village people saw that, they had to say something, and then the army would come in and kill any and all people that were affiliated or guilty. It was nothing more than to see something, say something. And it escalated into a genocide. I'm not saying that we're going to see a genocide here, but, I mean, when you look at history, and this is the problem with today's society, we're always repeating our own damn history. People want to talk about, oh, this was terrible. People want to focus on the Nazi and the Hitler regime, which was an awful thing, but they won't talk about other things that happened before and after that. They just want to focus on that one thing, which causes us to repeat history.
Yeah, that's our short memory. You know, Pol Pot, I mean, he was a hero. He was a rebel. They led a revolution against a corrupt government. It's when he got into power, he lost his frickin' mind.
Yeah.
He just became so paranoid. You know, they did collective punishment, which means if a guy down the road is suspected of doing something, they take the whole block. And
yep.
They put him in jail and kill him. I mean, that's what North Korea does.
It's a prime example of what power truly corrupts. This is why I am still worried about Egypt, because even though things have began to shift there, the people of that nation better be very choosy and very careful of who comes in next, because anyone can say, well, I'll never do this when I'm in power, and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. But once they're at the reins,
look what happened to Obama when he got in there.
Obama hasn't kept one promise at all.
He can't.
Not a single one. No, he can't, because he's got people that actually call the shots.
Yep.
You seen him lately? He looks like Nelson Mandela. He's only been in there a year.
He got his ass kicked. You know, he's just beaten up. He gets in there and
His heart was in the right place, but then they came and said, "Hey, we're gonna kill you if you don't shut up."
Listen, I'm gonna say something real quick about the Mayans. All right, the Mayans were really good about following Venus around. That was their astrology. All they did was follow Venus around where it was at, you know, and they did little monuments and that sort of thing. But I will not, you know, place my, you know, all my eggs in a basket when it comes to 2012 or any of that, anything with a date on it, from a group of people that would sacrifice 80,000 people in a day to appease a cloud. You know what I mean? People seem to think he's super, you know, wise, and they weren't.
The Dark Rift is that based on that Mayan game where they would play a game of basketball, literally, and pass it around, and I think whoever won or lost, I think it was one, gets their head cut off. That's what that whole game was based on, is the astrological event of that day called the Dark Rift.
Yeah. And our calendar does not match their calendar.
Not at all. Not even close.
You know?
Here's one thing
you
want to
understand.
Say, though.
Hold on, Jeff. You have to understand our calendar, we made it up.
Yep.
We made it up.
That's true.
So you can't go and put these, you know, these these dates on there that are, you know, the end of the world or 2012. You just can't, dude. It's just a number. There's
yeah,
no significance
to it. No one knows what's going to happen until it happens. So I think a lot of people are going to create things happening. But one thing I wanted to say is, It's funny how it seems like the end result of every government is to get corrupt in power, and then they start pulling out the gas ovens on some level to, like, make the world the way they think it should be, or to, you know, lower the population. I mean, look at any powerful government. Eventually, that's what happens. They turn into Hansel and Gretel and the witch.
When they get in there, their first goal is to stay in power, is to come up with a way to continuously stay in power.
But on the positive side of things, which is another proof of, in history, is that no empire lasts forever.
Right.
So, you know, there's this grand delusion with most of the people in this country that the United States is going to be lollipops and rainbows until who knows when. And that reality is slow. That dream, that delusion, is slowly dwindling away, because it's not. You know, what's happening now in this country, which it's unfortunate it has to go this way, but as I had said earlier, I really do think that an economic collapse in this country would be the first big good step to getting us on the proper track of things.
Yeah, I was pretty annoyed with the bailouts. I was like, let them fall, man.
Complete atrocity.
Let them fall.
And then you look at even more so, that really relates to the whole money system as far as the global emergency food supply. If you took all of the emergency food supplies that countries have around the world for their people, and if you utilize that for everyone's on the planet right now, that would last 30 days. So people better wake up, get their butts in gear, and start natural disasters to happen. Man-made disasters do happen. People need to prepare and should always have at least some kind of food, water, medical storage, no matter what. These people that when a catastrophe happens and they're going, oh, I had no idea, yada, well, listen, where do you live? Oh, you live in the area of the Gulf of Mexico? Okay, you never thought a hurricane would come? Oh, you live in Southern California? You never thought a hurricane would come? You live in a small house in the Midwest, or an earthquake, excuse me. You live in the Midwest, you never thought a tornado would hit you? I mean, people need to wake up. And people need
Listen,
to
dude,
just be prepared.
Most people can't grow a tomato. I can't grow a tomato.
Yes, there was an
catastrophe, dude, I would starve to death.
No,
I'm
you wouldn't.
Like every one of these other people out there that rely on the store for everything. I rely on the internet.
Guy, if you gave me a half hour where you and I just talked and I showed you some stuff, I guarantee you I could turn you into an organic farm grower, even if it meant making box gardens in your place. And that
I'm just saying, most people,
because they don't want to.
Yeah.
They're lazy.
Yeah, they can just go to the store and get it. Why should they grow it?
Yeah, but let's look at people need to wake up and look at what just happened in Mexico. You guys familiar with what just happened?
No.
With the crop freeze?
Oh, yeah. I posted an article.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And Sysco, which is the North America's largest distributor of food to restaurants and retail, their secondary, their backup, which, Jeffrey, I'm sure you've been following with the crops that happened in Florida.
Yeah.
Food prices are going to skyrocket. So it's going to get to a point where all these lazy people are not going to be able to go to the grocery stores. You've got hyperinflation. I think, what was it? A pound of granulated garlic in 1 week went from less than $20 to over $50.
That's good for vampires. Hey, have you noticed recently, let's get your view on this as we're getting to the end here. Recently, you know, Kepler had the discovery of all the planets, lot of new planets. And briefly right after that, it appeared that the government and all these space agencies have gone into major processions to start doing space stuff. They just announced some space National Space Agency to govern outer space from debris and hostile enemies, space debris and hostile enemies. It's Bigelow, which is, you know, we're always giving him hell, and MUFON, which, of course, I am corrupt. But basically, it's coming to Florida to build, to bring inflatable space habitats. Like, since this announcement, it seems like there's an orchestration of the government showing the public, you know, which I believe they already probably have so much going on out there than, you know, already, but they're orchestrating this. It's like a space renaissance just happened, sort of.
Well, and all they're doing is giving little bits of pieces of what they've already been doing. And why are they doing that? Are they trying to prepare people for something? Who knows? But just like you said, I mean, this whole governance of space and massive space exploration, this is nothing new. It's new for anyone that sits in their own bulk of GMO food watching Fox News, maybe. But for people like you two and others that I'm sure that listen to this show, this shouldn't be any big surprise.
Yeah, listen, nobody's going to have a problem with extraterrestrial life if it's, you know, a microbe. It's when we're no longer the top of the food chain, that's when the shit's going to hit the fan. You know what
well,
I mean?
Yeah, and but that's yeah, you're right, because human nature is going to cause people to riot in the streets, loot, plunder, because they're going to be so freaking scared they're not going to know what the hell to do with themselves. Yeah, absolutely.
Dude, this planet is going to burn. It will. I'm telling you, dude.
Purification by fire. Are you prophesizing?
I am, man. Praise Jeebus.
But I just wanted to, Aaron, it's definitely been great having you on the show to learn more about you. I've enjoyed it, and I think I have some dates open next in July. We should get you to come back to, like, maybe get into survivalism kind of topic. So, you know, when
now you're talking,
shit hits
yeah.
the fan that, you know, us fat guys won't die, we'll at least be able to grow a tomato or something.
I'd be happy to come on and talk about that, absolutely, because
I've been in all the wilderness, and I've been trying to wilderness it up, but I just never get around to it, and I, like, live in the middle of it.
I think it's important that we try to provide solutions to people, and if you want me to come back on and do that, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be great.
I want to thank both of you for giving me the opportunity to...
what is your link, too? Yeah, your main link.
Oh, the website is truthsurvival.com. It's http://truthsurvival.com. And I update it pretty much daily. I may not update it tonight just because I was on a radio show earlier and then this one, so... And in between that, I was working in the garden, so it's been a long day for me. But there'll definitely be a new report on there tomorrow.
All right. And also, I wanted to say that we were talking on the break about Colleen Thomas, that me and Aaron were talking about how to be completely just blacklisted from every radio show and out of the scene completely. So you have a few comments on that, Aaron?
No.
No, but I will comment on this. I'll just say be very careful of a lot of people out there right now that are giving out disinformation. They are doing it for motives that are not of service to you, and that particular person is an atrocity to what we're trying to do.
Amen.
Yeah, they're trying to do it to stay relevant because they don't have anything else.
Vagina pictures.
Yeah.
How much time do we have left, Guy?
We got about 3 minutes.
Anything else, Aaron, you'd like to add?
I just want to say thanks, guys, for the opportunity. And just like I said before, I definitely don't have all the answers, but I try to deliver as much of the evidence as I can and solutions. And just expand your mind. Try to learn something new every day, because I think that is really the food for the soul and the mind. That's what we need.
And I wanted to add that I named the show Super Soldier code name Eros, and people were like, I didn't know Eros had a code name, now Eros. And I put code name Eros on there just being a smart ass because we're near Valentine's Day, you know, Eros, the god of love.
Oh, I gotcha.
But if anybody, is your code name Eros?
I'll send them the link to the show.
Yeah. Before I forget,
just because I keep track of all the shows for people to listen to, would you be able to, when this is archived, just send me a link to it so I can add it to the Truth Survival?
Definitely, will do.
Yeah, I make a full recording.
Okay.
Of everything, and I'll put it on deposit files for you, and you can just download the whole thing.
Just okay. Send it to a Skype name. You adding them, right? Yeah.
What?
You have a Skype name on your Skype, right?
Yep.
Okay. Our next show with Aaron, we'll schedule it sometime. We can be the Rambo Survivalism special show for fat guys.
Fat, dope, white guys.
How to survive the apocalypse. But, yeah, I enjoyed it, Aaron. It's good to get to know you and hear your story. You seem passionate about the subject. I'm on the fence, but, I mean, I don't disbelieve it. I mean, I definitely... You know, it's a weird story, but I have a weird story, too, about, you know, UFOs and lizard people and beings of light. So everybody's got one, right?
Everyone's got one. That's true.
Yeah. So pleasure to have you on the show, and we'll definitely get you back on. And thanks a whole lot. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Aaron.
Thanks, Scott.
MegasIncarnate.com. Come post on the forum repeatedly. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Stephanie Benetti. Welcome to our show. Hi, my name is Stephanie Benetti. Welcome to our show, Second Sight NYC. It's Wednesday, February 9th, 2011, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm here with my co-host, psychic medium Chris George. Hi, Chris.
What's happening, Steph?
Not a busy night for us.
Yeah, we just were interviewed on Joe Montaldo's radio show tonight, and...